Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. Here we are, the last show before the midterm elections. We've been talking about this for so many months now, it's amazing that it's finally almost here. Nationally, it certainly seems like Republicans have momentum right now, and some of that is being seen on the local level, too. President Biden coming to California this week to stump for Mike Levin. Katie Porter's race moving into a toss-up. That's not something you saw coming necessarily a month or two ago. So we went down to Orange County and to San Diego County to talk to both sides in this race to get a sense of where things are at. A little later, we'll talk to my friend and mentor Dan Schnurr for some political analysis. And Ben Oreskes from the LA Times will join us with new polling in the LA mayor's race. But let's begin with the political situation in Orange County. Democratic Congresswoman Katie Porter is driving her family minivan all around Orange County, knocking on hundreds of voters' doors in what could be one of the country's closest congressional races.
We've always known this election would be competitive, and we've treated it that way.
And how about you? How are you doing today?
Oh, great. How are you?
Thanks for all your hard work.
Her opponent, Republican businessman Scott Baugh, is also busy making calls and pressing the flesh.
It's been close actually since August, but the issues are shifting in our direction.
Orange is the new blue.
Porter first won this seat back in 2018.
Famous whiteboard, one
Famous
of them here.
Yeah. We have several of them.
She's used those whiteboards during congressional hearings to take on big business, and those moments often go viral.
You spend most of your company's money making money for yourself and your shareholders.
She's become a regular fixture on national cable news, late night shows, and has over a million followers on Twitter.
By becoming a national star, she became an elitist and forgot her district. And since she's not paying attention to the issues in her district, it's made the race a lot closer than it could have been.
What do you say to those charges?
I live here. My kids go to school here. I am in the community every single day. I've had tons of town halls, both telephone and in person. I write back to every constituent who writes to me.
Every 10 years, the congressional district lines are redrawn. Porter currently lives and represents Irvine. That would stay the same. But the new district also includes 65% of voters who currently live in other districts. Here's the new district map. It stretches from Seal Beach in the north to Laguna Beach in the south. It's 36% Democratic and 34% Republican.
Two-thirds of the district she hasn't ever represented,
right.
And it's the conservative part of the district.
Baugh previously served as the head of the Orange County Republican Party. Porter is attacking his time in the 90s leading the Republicans in the California Assembly.
Scott Baugh faced more than 20 criminal charges.
The fact is that Scott Baugh was indicted for 4 felonies and 18 misdemeanors. He paid the largest fine at the time in the history of the California Election Practices Commission, $50,000, for campaign fraud violations.
Because she's losing, she can't talk about the issues. So she goes on a smear job of something that happened 26 years ago that the court said the prosecutors cheated and everything was dismissed.
Katie Porter has failed us.
Republicans attacking Porter on inflation.
I have a whiteboard question for Katie. Why do you keep making life more expensive for us?
Porter says the issue is personal for her.
I'm a single mom of 3 kids. I'm in the grocery store and I see the problems. And the problem is corporate America is adding on about 50 cents a profit for every extra dollar that we've been paying in the last year. And to solve that, we need people who will stand up to corporate interests, people like me who refuse corporate PAC money and refuse lobbyist money. My opponent in this race is a lobbyist.
All politics is local and you got to pay attention to what your constituents want. And the constituents in this district, they want government to stop spending so much. They don't want government involved in every area of our lives.
President Biden traveled to Irvine recently to campaign for Porter. This week, he came to San Diego County to campaign for Congressman Mike Levin.
Let's make sure we win this election. Get out the vote. We gotta win. Vote, vote, vote.
Earlier this week, we spoke to Levin in San Clemente.
Vote for Mike Levin.
Thank you.
Yeah. All good?
Okay. And his Republican challenger, Brian Marriott, at his Oceanside campaign headquarters. Their race is so close. President Biden is personally coming here to stump for Levin.
What does it mean to you to have the president in your district?
means that I think we've had a really great working relationship the last couple of years.
It's a failed president coming to stand alongside a failed congressman.
Before Levin was elected to Congress in 2018, he was an attorney and clean energy advocate.
For me, it's the issue that permeates so much else in terms of having a livable planet, a livable future. My wife and I have two young kids, 10 and 8 years old, and I think a lot about them and the planet they're going to inherit.
Marriott, a father of three, served as San Juan Capistrano mayor and as a certified financial advisor.
I think we need business people in Washington, Alex. We've got activists there now.
This district includes 52 miles of California coastline. Before redistricting redrew the lines, it was mostly San Diego County, including here in Oceanside. The district now includes more of Orange County beaches, and with that comes the LA media market, which is more crowded and more expensive.
Here's the new map. The more conservative Laguna Niguel was added in. The district, now 36% Democrat, 33% Republican, and the rest independent. Like so many places, inflation is a big issue here.
I know what it's like to work and see your savings devoured by inflation and taxes. We've got to stop the printing and spending that's going on now. We've got to regain our energy independence, undo everything they did.
But what are the Republican plans?
A bunch of bull.
And tax cuts for rich people seem to be their plan for just about everything.
Levin says the Inflation Reduction Act he passed will help long term by allowing Medicare to negotiate prescription drugs and by making the largest investment in green technology in U.S. history.
That's why I went to Washington, D.C., and our work continues, which is why I want to stay and keep that work going.
Levin says he secured federal funds to help with coastal erosion and is working with the Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, to move railways impacted by climate change.
When it comes to getting that federal funds, it helps to be working with the president instead of against him?
Absolutely.
Marriott says a Republican House would prioritize border security.
Technology, resources, empowering ICE, hiring the agents we need, training, and a whole new attitude at the border.
Those two races are among the many we've been covering for months here on The Issue Is. You can go to our website, theissueisshow.com, for our past interviews, or you can listen to our podcast featuring many of those interviews. Just search for The Issue Is wherever you stream those podcasts. All right, joining us now to sit in that chair to discuss the state of these races is one of our favorites, who's been with us literally since our first show. Dan Schnur is a professor who's taught at UC Berkeley and Pepperdine at Harvard now, right? And at USC, of course, where he once taught me. He worked with Pete Wilson, John McCain back in the day. Dan, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Alex, thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
We called in the big dogs for this big last show before the election. You just heard from all the candidates there. Where do you see the state of this race right now?
Well, I mean, to me, what's most instructive, and you never make predictions in the last days before such a close election. What's so instructive, Alex, are the congressional races that we're talking about. When you and I were talking 2 or 3 months ago, the congressional races on which most of the nation was focusing were Mike Garcia's campaign against Christie Smith up at the Ventura LA border, were Michelle Steele and Young Kim's races down in Orange County. Now we're talking about Democratic incumbents, and we're talking about Democratic incumbents in congressional districts that Joe Biden carried by a fairly safe margin just 2 years ago. That's not to say that the Democrats can't win these races and maintain their majority, but they're clearly playing defense, and they're going to have to win an overwhelming majority of the toss-up races in order to keep that House majority.
And we got new polling out this week from USC Schwarzenegger and USC Price School. Let's put this up on the screen of what issue is most important to California voters. Not a big surprise here. 15% say inflation, 13% say homelessness, 11% say climate change, 8% say crime. What I think is interesting, what's not on there is abortion. And Democrats have spent months making that the big issue of these races, and that is not where California voters are.
The absence of abortion rights in a deep blue state like California is astounding. The Democrats made a bet after the Dobbs decision this last summer when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. They believed that angry and perhaps frightened pro-choice voters would motivate their base to turn out in a way that normally doesn't happen in midterm elections. We're not seeing that here in California. And even nationally, the New York Times poll showed last week that only 5% of Americans rank abortion as the issue on which they're most likely to vote. Quick statistic, the Democrats this cycle have spent over $400 million on ads about abortion. The Republicans have spent $11 million. And that 40 or 45 to 1 ratio represents an immense gamble on their part. And you've only seen in the last several days now Democrats scrambling to talk about inflation, the economy, and democracy and other issues, which is somewhat of an admission that their strategy hasn't paid off the way they wanted it to.
I'm Lonnie Chen.
Republican Lonnie Chen is hoping to be the first Republican to win statewide since 2006. Here is the latest poll in that race. This is from USC, Schwarzenegger, and the Price School. It shows Malik Cohen, the Democrat, at 58, Lonnie Chen at 42, and he is the closest of any Republican in any of the statewide races. Republicans are getting blown out in all of them. We're back now with political analyst Dan Schnur. Dan, we have seen Republicans try to win statewide since 2006. We've seen independents try it. You tried it as an independent to run for Secretary of State. You didn't win. No Republicans have won. Is it even possible, given the current breakdown of where everything's at, for anybody other than a Democrat to win?
Well, it has taken Republicans, it has taken California Republicans many, many years to dig themselves into this hole. They're not going to get out of it overnight, or not even in one or two election cycles. It's possible, it's worth remembering, it is possible for Republicans to win in deep blue states. There are Republican governors in the state of Massachusetts, in the state of Maryland, not too long ago in the state of Illinois. But in those states, the Republican Party has decided to run candidates more in tune with the electorate in that state as opposed to the national party. California Republicans haven't been willing to make that adjustment. And what you end up with is a party that focuses almost all of its attention on national candidates and on local campaigns and pays almost no attention to statewide politics.
Yeah, and Lonnie Chen is sort of somebody that's focused on the local issues, but maybe it's harder as a controller candidate versus like governor, which gets more attention as well. You know, let's talk for a moment about Governor Newsom. He's so far ahead that he has not campaigned at all. And he is weighing in on national issues. He did an interview with Major Garrett of CBS this week, and he reiterated a theme of something he said on the issue is a few months ago. Take a look.
It goes to my fundamental grievance with my damn party. We're getting crushed on narrative.
So he's making the argument that the Democrats aren't doing a good job of selling their own narrative, especially when it comes to the economy, and that Democrats need to be more aggressive. What do you make of his moves?
So I guess a cardinal rule of politics is when you're very close to a critical midterm election, the phrase, my damn party, is probably not one that you ought to be using on national television. Newsom is reflecting the concerns and the frustrations of a lot of Democrats. They'd like to see Biden, they'd like to see the national party being much more aggressive and combative in taking on the Republican Party. What's interesting about Newsom is that most of the most strident voices in the national Democratic debate, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, all speak from the far left wing of the party, from its progressive base. Mm-hmm. Newsom is trying to establish himself as the center-left alternative to that far-left anger. His beef with Biden, if you listen closely, isn't ideology, it's temperament.
And it seems like he's trying to set himself up as the alternative that if the Democrats lose the House and potentially lose the Senate, look, we should have done this if you followed me and did things more like I was saying, then maybe you would have had a chance. Meanwhile, he's not spending very much time campaigning for many local Democrats.
So Gavin Newsom is running for president, regardless of what he says. The only question is whether he is running in 2024 or 2028. If Joe Biden does not run for re-election, and the only person who knows the answer to that, as near as I can tell, is Dr. Jill Biden. If Joe Biden does not run, then Newsom is positioning himself almost perfectly to step into that center-left slot. If Biden does decide to seek a second term, then Newsom just waits 4 years, and either way, he's ready to go.
Our thanks to Dan Schnur. Now let's talk about the latest in the LA mayor's race.
Check out this new poll from the LA Times and UC Berkeley that shows the LA mayor's race within the margin of error. Karen Bass at 45, Rick Caruso at 41. Caruso making up 10 points among likely voters in a month. He's clearly got the momentum, but will he have enough to get over 50%? Ben Oreskes wrote the story about the poll for The Times. He joins us now in studio. Ben, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time. Good to have you in the building.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
So what is the big takeaway from that poll?
When we do these polls, we get them. Remember, they're a snapshot in time, and the most important thing is to look at trajectories. And as you said in your intro, Rick Caruso has been gaining ground on Karen Bass for months now. And over the last, you know, better part of a month, he has been up on the air with millions of dollars in advertising. He's been running around the city, and he's been making a point that the city is broken and needs to be fixed, and that seems to be resonating. One thing that's important to point out is that Karen Bass, she hasn't actually dropped at all. She was at 46% in our last poll, now at 45%. So she's happy with these numbers, but again, she sees Caruso nipping at her feet, and it just is uncomfortable because it's tight.
So he has been winning over the undecided voters. The question is, there's still 13% undecided. Can he get those people, which would potentially put him over the top? Now, one of the groups you guys have been talking about for months now that's the key to this is potentially Latino voters, and he's doing really well with them. Let's put that number up on the screen. Caruso at 48% among Latino voters. Bass is at 31%. And Ben, this is a big swing.
It is. She was up by, I think, 9 or 8 the last time we did this poll. And again, it's about the shape of the electorate. When we do these polls, we are asking people how likely you are to vote. And so Rick Caruso is banking on the idea that he can pull in all of these people who don't often vote, and often those people are Latino. And that seems to be working. And also, he's doing a ton of Spanish language media, advertising and press. And again, it's a message about public safety, a message about homelessness. He's speaking to communities that are lower income and aren't much like him, and it seems to be resonating.
And he's spending millions of dollars to literally get out the vote, which we've never seen before, so much spending to literally try to take Latino voters to the polls themselves. And he's also spending millions of dollars on TV ads, radio ads. Let's put this number up on the screen right now. The amount of total spending just on TV ads alone, this is just in the general election. This doesn't include the primary. Rick Caruso, an unprecedented $26 million. Karen Bass at $3 million.
Caruso will probably have spent over $100 million by the time we're done with this election.
So money doesn't necessarily buy his success in politics, but it is giving him a fighting shot in all this. One other big change since the last time you guys released a poll was this giant scandal at LA City Council, which, by the way, is a story you broke.
With my colleagues.
Congratulations on the biggest story of the year. How has that impacted this race, if at all?
When it comes to the scandal at LA City Hall, where you have these city council members and a prominent union official making incredibly racist, coarse comments about colleagues, speaking about the city in very crude terms, it's hard to tell exactly. So you have a couple of factors at play. You have one, we weren't talking about the mayor's race for a couple weeks. Two, you do have us talking about themes that both of the candidates have talked about in the race. How it truly will shape voters, it's hard to tell. You know, I was out in the Valley last week, and you could sort of feel people were aware of it, but they were also sort of exhausted by the headlines as well.
And meanwhile, just while we have you, an update on the latest there, because we know that Nury Martinez, who was council president, has resigned. Kevin De Leon has not and said, I'm not going anywhere. And everybody in his party, everybody on the council says, you got to go, and he's still there. Is he basically there to stay? I mean, what's the latest on that?
Well, I wouldn't know because he hasn't taken my calls. He hasn't spoken to the LA Times since the scandal broke. He was on KBLA with Tavis Smiley last week. It did an hour-long radio hit with him and basically said, I would be doing a disservice to my constituents if I stepped down. That message has landed so far on deaf ears among Angelenos living in CD14. It's really hard to see. His colleagues don't want him there. His constituents don't seem to want him there either. A recall petition has been submitted against him. And right now it feels like he's kind of like waiting for the storm to pass. We'll see if people have not forgotten about that in a couple weeks or months.
And his big argument is that he needs to serve his constituents.
influence. Meanwhile, he hasn't shown up to a city council meeting since saying that. It's kind of hard to serve your constituents when you're not in the building.
Exactly.
Ben, great work. You can read his work at latimes.com.
Our thanks to Ben, our thanks to Dan, and our hope is that you will vote. Get educated and vote. And our hope is that this show has been helpful in some way in making you a little bit more educated to go out there and make a decision. Decisions are made by those show up. So go show up. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week to See What You Say.